Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up in a little while, we will take part of that news conference that Sotirios Johnson was just reporting on by Governor David Paterson. What cuts will he propose that might affect health benefits, education, mass transit for all New Yorkers? He is livid at the legislature for not coming up with any proposals of their own by the deadline of last Friday that he had set in advance of a special session that's coming up. So Governor Paterson is laying out his own proposed cuts, and we will get some takes on that coming up, and we'll play part of that news conference. But right now, what might the election of Barack Obama mean for U.S. relations with the Muslim world and for the fight against violent jihad? Obviously, protecting against another 9/11 is one of the highest priorities of the American people. And the New York Times had a piece on Saturday quoting a jihadi leader in Iraq saying radicals will benefit from the Obama victory, and his victory is on some level their victory. But Sarah Lawrence, Middle East Studies professor for Wajir Jess, an expert on political Islam, has written an op-ed saying Obama's foreign policy is likely to be seen as pro-Islam around the Muslim world in a way that discourages jihad. He joins us now. Professor Jess, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your article says before the election, Arab and Islamic countries showed some of the lowest support for Obama worldwide. Why the skepticism about change they can believe in?
Brian, a year and a half ago, there was a great deal of attraction and fascination with Barack Obama. In my travels throughout the Arab and Muslim world, people could not believe that America, white domineering America, would elect a president like a person like Barack Obama. There's still a great deal of excitement about Barack Obama, but there's also a great deal of skepticism that President-elect Barack Obama would be able to construct a radical foreign policy towards the Muslim world. The idea, there's a widely held belief in Arab and Muslim societies that American foreign policy is institutionalized, that the Israel lobby micromanages American foreign policy towards the Arab and the Muslim world, and that Barack Obama, his political survival, his political interest, would basically dominate basically any particular debate about the Arab and Muslim world towards that part of the world.
The New York Times, as I mentioned, had a piece on Saturday that had the headline, Jihadi Leader Says Radicals Share Obama Victory. It starts, the leader of a jihadi group in Iraq argued Friday that the election of Barack Obama as president represented a victory for radical Islamic groups that had battled American forces since the invasion of Iraq. This was an audio-taped speech by Abu Omar al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic State of Iraq, an umbrella organization that claims ties to al-Qaeda. Are you familiar with him or his organization, and what do you make of that claim?
Of course I am. I mean, he's one of the top senior chiefs of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Let me put it this way, Brian. What do you expect the leaders of al-Qaeda, the various affiliates of al-Qaeda, to say? My argument all along is that the election of Barack Obama represents Bin Laden's worst nightmare. Barack Obama hammers a deadly nail in the war of ideas and in the ideological struggle that's taken place between the global jihad movement and the international community, particularly the United States. Why do you ask, why does Barack Obama represent Bin Laden's worst nightmare? First of all, he robs Bin Laden and the violent jihadis of the so-called the war of ideas and the clash of religions and civilizations. Here you have Barack Obama who deeply subscribes to a commitment to politics, engagement, dialogue, debate, multilateralism, and partnership in international politics. Here is a president who talks about building bridges to the Muslim world. He is a president who does not subscribe to the so-called either you're either with us, you're either against us. He's a person who has promised to visit a leading Muslim nation and make the argument that we are not in a war against Islam and Muslims, but rather we are in a campaign against Al-Qaeda itself. And in this particular sense, I can tell you, Brian, even though there's a great deal of skepticism about whether Barack Obama would be able to construct a radically different foreign policy towards the Muslim world, leading television stations in the Arab world celebrated the victory of Barack Obama, including Al Jazeera, LBC, Dubai, and others. There's a great deal. Remember, Barack Obama reminds many Arabs and Muslims of their own heritage, the African blood, the Muslim heritage. And in this particular sense, I would argue that Barack Obama has already shattered Arabs and Muslims' stereotypes about the so-called white domineering America that basically in the last 6-7 years tried to dominate the Arab world. And in this particular sense, what can Osama bin Laden now say about American foreign policy when Barack Obama says, I will basically utilize America's soft power, I will basically subscribe to political means to resolve outstanding differences with that part of the world, mm-hmm. instead of relying on hyper-military force as we have done in the last 6 or 7 years.
So how can he start to make some of this concrete? I noticed that in your article you went down a list of some of the campaign promises that he made that you think augur well. Now he has to actually do them. And one of the things you wrote about was that one of his first initiatives, he promised, would be to visit a pivotal Muslim country to make the case that the U.S. is not waging a war against Islam. Do you have any sense of where that might be or, in your opinion, where that should be?
I mean, he has really multiple options to visit, whether it is Cairo, Egypt, or whether Tehran, Iran, or whether it's Indonesia, or whether it's Saudi Arabia. It's not just about paying a visit to a pivotal Muslim country. It's about really political engagement. And it's not just about rhetoric, uplifting rhetoric, and the rhetoric is wonderful. Also, it's about substance here.
So again, go ahead. What kind of substance? What kind of engagement, for example?
I would say, Brian, we're talking about really 3 or 4 theaters. I mean, I think Barack Obama must deliver on his pledge to pull out American forces responsibly from Iraq. We're talking about a 16-month timetable. I think this is a very responsible and very rational and very credible agenda. I fear that Barack Obama has already come under tremendous pressure from the military and some of his hawkish advisors not to really carry out his pledge which he has made to the American people in the last 2 years. I think extracting American forces from Iraq is really critical. It's critical not only because we are spending about $148 billion a year, $10 billion a month, I mean, and this is a critical factor in the equation, but also about sending a message to the Arab and Muslim world, we are not there to stay. We would like to give back sovereignty to Iraq. And look, there is an ideal situation for Barack Obama today. An overwhelming number of Iraqis, Iraqi citizens and the Iraqi political class would like the United States to basically have a timetable for pulling out its troops from Iraq. And I don't think that the so-called the status of agreement between the United States and the Iraqi government would take place before December. So here you have Barack Obama who could go to the American public and say, listen, the Iraqis would like us out. We would like to get out because of multiple factors. Let's have a credible and responsible timetable to pull out of Iraq. Secondly, I would like President-elect Barack Obama to invest considerable political capital in bringing the Palestinians and the Israelis into the negotiating table. Brian, if there is one particular critical factor, that is, most Arabs, and I would argue many Muslims, look at American foreign policy through the prism of the Arab-Israeli conflict. putting an end to the shedding of Palestinian and Jewish blood would be really one of the most shattering watersheds in relations between the United States and the Muslim world.
Let me stay on that for a minute. What do you think he could do that the Bush administration isn't currently doing? Of course, they had set a goal of trying to get to a final status peace plan by the end of the Bush administration, which they now acknowledge won't be possible. But is there some different approach to it that you think Obama has signaled that he will take?
Absolutely. Brian, for 7 years, the Bush administration neglected the Palestinian-Israeli conflict or theater for 7 years. Barack Obama has made it very clear he will invest precious political capital in the first year of his administration and exerting pressure on both Israelis and Palestinians to come to the negotiating table and make the painful concessions to basically reach a breakthrough. And here, the truth is, Brian, not only depends on what Barack Obama does, and he says he will invest political capital. I believe him when he says so. The question is, what kind of political cabinet, what kind of political pool of advisors will he have? Will his advisors tell him, Mr. President, the Palestinians and the Israelis are not ready yet? Like President Bush advisors told them in the first year, leave them alone. They are not ready for a settlement yet. I would like to see the United States basically taking a leadership role, not only in investing political capital, but in exerting real pressure on both camps in order to engineer a settlement. And we know now the broad contours of a Palestinian-Israeli settlement. It needs the investments, of course, of the president. And finally, in terms of priorities, my fear, Brian, is that President-elect Barack Obama subscribes to the overall construct of the so-called war on terror. This is a highly misguided concept engineered by a small group of ideologues. The so-called, when we say the war on terror, the so-called long war in which the United States finds itself involved for many years and many generations against real and imagined enemies. I like what I hear from Barack Obama. This is a campaign against Al-Qaeda and fringe militant groups. As opposed to being a war without an end. And here now we find Barack Obama adjusting his position in terms of Afghanistan, even though he subscribed to the idea that the Afghanistan represents the central front in the war on terror, and he pledged to increase American forces by 2 brigades in Afghanistan. In the last few days, we have heard Barack Obama talking about a political vision, a regional settlement, by which what he means by that is that take into account a region-wide settlement, which involves Iran, Pakistan, India, and Afghanistan, and also investment in governance and politics, the political economy of Afghanistan. So again, this is also represents a very reassuring footnote on the part of Barack Obama that he understands the complexity of the Afghan-Pakistan conflict, and that there is no military solution in the Afghan-Pakistan theater.
Fawaz Jerjes, expert on political Islam, professor of Middle East Studies at Sarah Lawrence College, my guest on WNYC, talking about the implications of the election of Barack Obama for violent jihad. Let's take a phone call, 212-433-WNYC. Gary in Queens, you're on WNYC with Fawaz Jerjes. Hello.
Hi. I'm sure he's an expert, but he's also a wrong expert. I'll just touch on 4 quick things. First, the grievances that radicals have is theological. It's not political. If Israel would have been recognized as a sovereign state by now, if it was just about borders. Number two, the radicals tend to see accommodation as weakness, as appeasement. They take advantage. When you stand up to them, that's when you seek get results.
Keep going. Number three, go ahead.
We have, as a fringe movement, Sharia. The Sharia movement is not a fringe movement. We have Sharia investments now. Courts in the United Kingdom are recognizing Sharia law.
Gary, I can't let you just filibuster. But one of the points that he told our screener that he was going to make, which is very interesting, is that Obama won't be seen by a large swath of the Muslim world as kind of like them, because he had a Muslim father, he would be seen, as Edward Luttwak wrote in an op-ed some months ago, as an apostate, because he has had a Muslim father then, but then chose to live as a Christian. How much of a risk do you think there is in that?
It's really rubbish, Brian. It has no reality element to it whatsoever. Guess what Barack Obama is called in Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia being the heartland of Islam, where the Prophet Muhammad was born and the two most important religious shrines are. He called Abu Hussein, Hussein being his father, as it's an endearment term. Truly, even though, as I repeat what I said earlier, that even though there's a great deal of skepticism that American foreign policy would change toward the Arab and Muslim world, there's a great deal of excitement about Barack Obama, not only because of his uplifting rhetoric about America's relations with the world, but because of what Barack Obama represents. His African heritage, his Muslim heritage, and also the potential, for a new beginning with the United States.
And on Gary's first point, that those who really are engaged in radical Islam are engaged in what they see as a religious quest, not a political quest. And even if they are engaged in what they see as a political quest in the United States, that radical fringe, that sliver that actually is interested in carrying out violent attacks against Americans at home and abroad, they're not going to be dissuaded by the election of Barack Obama. So why wouldn't we be likely to see them try to ratchet it up to provoke him in the way that Joe Biden, I guess, predicted would happen on some international front, to try to launch something soon to draw a response from Obama militarily so they can say, see, he's just like the rest of them?
Brian, this is exactly what American foreign policy has been since 9/11. American foreign policy, as constructed by the so-called neoconservatives, was based on the idea there is no difference between the radical wing of political Islam and the mainstream political Islam. That is, basically, they lumped Osama bin Laden with the overwhelming, dominant, and most powerful elements in Muslim societies. And they talked about Islamofascism and Islamofascists. You're absolutely correct. No one is suggesting that the militant fringe basically welcomes the election of Barack Obama or basically accept any kind of call on the part of Barack Obama for a civilizational dialogue. What we're talking about here, Brian, is what I call the floating middle of Arab and Muslim public opinion. What does the election of Barack Obama mean for American foreign policy and how America is perceived in the dominant public, within the dominant public opinion in the Arab and Muslim world? In this particular sense, I would argue that it's essential for Barack Obama not to lump Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda with the dominant mainstream Muslim and Arab public opinion, as the Bush administration has done. And we're talking about here how to hammer a deadly nail in the coffin of the militant fringe. In the last 7 years, we now realize that the policies pursued by the Bush administration have produced the opposite results from their intended consequences. In fact, Barack's Obama's major argument, which is extremely credible, that is, the policies in the last 7 years have tarnished America's standing in the world and have created more enemies for the United States. It's about time to reverse this particular policy of lumping Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, which represents, Brian, we're talking about less than 0.1 of the 1.3 billion Muslims, to put it really in blunt number terms. And this is why Barack Obama would appeal to the floating middle of Arab and Muslim public opinion in order for them to take the war against al-Qaeda. Remember what the Bush administration has done since 9/11. He said this is a war, it's our war, against not only al-Qaeda, but the so-called Islamofascists. It's about time that Barack Obama changes how the war is framed. This is not a war between us and al-Qaeda. This is a war within Islam itself. It's a war between the mainstream Muslim public opinion and al-Qaeda, and we shall do everything in our power to help Arab and Muslim public opinion to fight the war against their own extremists and to win the war against Al-Qaeda and his cohorts.
Hasha in Jackson Heights. You're on WNYC. Hello, Hasha.
Hi. I just want to make point that regarding the conflict in Middle East, Israel and Palestinians, is that of course, radical changes, I believe, has to be made to solve this problem. Does he, President-elect Obama, really wish to be one of these people to solve this problem? Depends not only how truthfully he is sincere to do that and capable to do it, but also the respect of all the resolution conflict between Middle East between Israel and Palestinian that United Nations has passed. Resolution has to be respected.
Yes. So do you...
Also, international law has to be respected regarding this.
Which you imagine would help the Palestinian cause, I presume.
Will help not only Palestinian, Israeli, and everybody else.
Do you have much faith that Obama will create positive change in the Middle East, or are you starting as a skeptic, Hasha?
I'm skeptic, but in the same talking, I'm very hopeful because he's a very capable, intelligent person, but I don't know how really, truly he's interested to put all the effort that he's able to do. We're going to see it.
All right. Thank you very much. And Fawaz Rajesh, before you go, just a reaction to one thing in today's news. There was an article about Turkey offering to play a mediation role between the United States and Iran as a Muslim nation, but as a more secular Muslim nation and a country that considers itself of the West. Do you think that there's opportunity for Turkey in this respect that might actually lead to something constructive between the U.S. and Tehran?
You know, Brian, Turkey really is a fascinating case. It's a fascinating case because it bridges the divide between the Muslim world and the Western world. And in fact, Turkey in the last 1 year and a half has played a very constructive role between Israel and Syria. As you know, the Syrian-Israeli talks have come a long way, thanks to the active role played by Turkey. And I think Turkey can play a constructive role vis-a-vis Iran, but I would argue that the question of Iran, Brian, is highly complicated. It's highly complicated because it goes to the very heart of American foreign policy in the Persian Gulf, in the Middle East, and also in the Afghan-Pakistan theater. And truly, Barack Obama, to be fair to Barack Obama, he faces some major challenges. Engaging Iran, it's easy to say, let's engage Iran. But no engagement of Iran is possible without finding a resolution to the American presence in Iraq, to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, to the question of Afghanistan and the Taliban. And that's why when we talk about, I mean, the various separate pieces of the puzzle, what we need to talk about, Brian, is a region-wide settlement in which the United States engages the pivotal players. What I mean by the pivotal players, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Israel, and the Palestinians, in order to engineer a settlement whereby Iran's interests are guaranteed, American vital interests are protected, and Israel's security interests are also preserved, not to mention the establishment of a viable Palestinian state that appeals to the majority of Arab public opinion in that part of the world.
Well, that's a big question, whether a whole overarching regional approach is possible or whether he needs to kind of go one country, one issue at a time. But very interesting stuff. Fawaz Rajesh, professor in Middle East and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence College, author of books including Journey of the Jihadist, The Far Enemy, and Political Islam. Always a pleasure, Professor Rajesh. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, we'll get the latest on the Mineo police brutality case, and then we'll hear Governor David Paterson from his news conference this hour. Serious fiscal pain in New York State, as everywhere, and the governor is actually right now unveiling his proposals for cuts, we expect, in health benefits, in education, and other things. So we'll see what's actually up. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.